If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
No Sleepers.
And welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit.
Another one.
Oh man, so hey, happy guys. To be back.
Yeah, welcome back to another week of book and pop culture chat. Thank you so much again for subscribing. Make sure you subscribe so I can say thank you to you next week.
For being...
Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy to be here. How are you, lovely?
Better.
Drinking
my tonic water. I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm good.
How was the week?
The week was ups and down.
Yeah.
But, you know, we move, we keep it pushing.
Yeah.
I'm back. I just haven't taken a bit of break from social media.
Mm-hmm.
Just deleted the apps off my phone, actually. So I'm not deactivated, so I'm still there. So you can still contact me. It is what it is.
But you're just not there.
I'm just I'm checking it like at intervals now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all good. Everything's all right.
I think that's good. I think having, I was talking to one of my friends and she's like, one, Twitter is like a dirty road. Yeah. You know, like it's the ghetto.
I remember tweeting in second year. I was like, Twitter's like the slum. It's like, okay, not the slum. I wouldn't say the slum. It's like Gotham. You see what I mean? So like, it's obviously a well-built up infrastructure. It's a fully fledged working city. But then there's just the corrupt, rotten bits that happen, especially at night. Twitter after dark is trash.
Yeah, trash.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the ghetto. It's the Gotham ghetto.
Especially those people that have it in night mode.
Yeah, I don't understand.
So I have it in night mode.
Do you? I really think that's just bizarre. Why is your eye squinting?
You're not squinting.
Yes, you are. Your eye is squinting.
It's actually easier on your eyes.
No.
Than in night mode, yeah.
Because if I have, like, when I have my phone on night mode, I'm like, why am I squinting my eye? Because I can't see.
Yeah, but it's
no.
It's easier. Do you dim your phone? So everything's just on bright all the time.
Yeah. I like to see.
Aren't you tired?
No.
Like, my eyes actually are like, you know what, Alex? We need to look away from this screen.
But I totally understand taking a social media break. I think I've drastically reduced my time on there because I'm literally just like, my life is very interesting.
Obsessed.
And I'm very busy, so I actually don't have time.
You know what? And it's like, I'm looking at everybody's lives, but and then you think to yourself, at this stage in my life, I don't actually care. Like,
yeah.
You know, like I was going places and I thought, oh, I could Instagram this. And I thought,
I was going places.
That I was walking around.
Like, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I could Instagram this.
And then
I
you're thought, like, why?
But why would anybody want to see what I'm doing? Like, I'm fine. But I just want to take a break. But I will be back on my bullshit very soon. So it's all good. It's all good. But follow me at Alex Reeds on Instagram.
Small plug right there. I'm not on it, but you know, you can follow me.
Yeah, follow me. Like, I'm gonna post stuff soon. I'm literally just taking a sabbatical.
Right.
Taking a moment.
Taking a sabbatical.
I'm on you. What was your week like?
My week has been so good.
So good.
It's been really good. Like, my mood this week has been incredible. I've just been super happy. I've just been, you know what? I think it's God, because I've had these like epiphanies where I'm like, there was this girl, I was sitting with this girl,
mm-hmm.
and she was like,
story time.
No, we were just talking and she was like, oh, like, Raifa, like, you seem to just have, like, your life, like, under... Like, you seem like every part of your life is under control. And you just have it together. Like, how do you do it? And I just went in some spiel, and I didn't even feel like a fraud when she was telling me this. Like, I genuinely in my heart was like, yeah, my every aspect of my life is under control.
Is it?
And I'm, yeah, like, I'm very much in control,
you know what, when people
of every aspect of my life, because I'm so meticulous right now with everything that's happening in my life, who I allow in my life, who I don't allow, the boundaries I set, the people I love. And it's, I'm just all about, listen, the life is so short. And imagine suffering. God forbid.
Imagine suffering, but suffering.
Just, no, like suffering intentionally. Suffering, yeah. No, like sometimes you suffer, yeah? And like you go through shit, cool. But to actively be like, oh, you know, some back in the day, I used to be that person, like if I'm feeling a certain way, I'd want to increase that pain just because I just want to wallow in it. I would just do everything in my might to feel the feels. And that, and then I just was like...
That's called being a mess.
It's a masochist type of thing.
Yeah. How can you say I want to feel... I want to go through the struggle.
I was always like, you know what? Yeah, let me feel it. And now I'm like, I don't have time. Life is so short.
I'm finished.
It's okay to be like... You just need to be happy. And I feel like when you have discipline, you really just do not allow... rubbish to enter, because you are so disciplined that you have things in control. And even when they're not in control, you're in control of the uncontrollable. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like, yeah, things are like happening that are outside of my control. Because yeah, like you can't control people, you can't control certain situations, but that is life. But you just need to be okay with that. You handle what you can and what you can't. You give to God, but you say, this is how much I can allow the things that I can't control in my life. So when she told me this, I was like, yeah, I was just preaching. I was like, girl, go to therapy. You know, she's like, you go to the gym, you have all this time, you work all these long hours, but you can still fit everything in. And I was like, listen, sis, God is good.
Listen, whenever people ask me that, and they're
God,
like,
God is good, and like, I just have it, and I just, I know what I'm after, I know what I'm doing, I know what I'm after, I know my purpose, I know, you know what I'm doing, you know? So,
do you know what? I think I'm just self-deprecating, because I'd be like, I'm like on the outside it's fine, on the inside I'm crumbling and I'm like, ha. But it is a thing, like, you do, like, we have a lot more control than we think.
Absolutely,
we do,
yeah,
than we think we do. And yeah, it's really about understanding what our limits are, what our boundaries are, what we can and can't do. So actually understanding that it's okay to say, I'm not doing this
right
today.
It's okay to say, I don't need your situation. Sorry, I had to get it in. I don't need your situation. Girls, guys, if you see, Alex is cracking up. If you see anything in this life that's going to give you stress, if somebody wants to come and give you stress, if somebody that isn't even like the center of like your world is coming to do give and take, you look them in the eye and you say, I don't need your situation. You look at the world events that are there to do higgy haggy on your life and you say, what? What do you say, Alex?
I don't need your situation.
I don't need your situation.
I don't need your situation. I might have to get that, like,
fam, sent to me. When Jordan was, yeah, that whole Hello of Chloe, let's not even talk about it because it's not our range. We don't really talk about that stuff. But let's just say that I felt that in my heart, in it, my spirit. I was like, this is true. I don't need it.
All right, let's get on with the show. Let's get on with the show. Yeah, but anyway, guys, but thank you so much for following. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe.
Check out
our latest episode. We spoke about reading the 1%. You guys were so engaging on there. It was really great to see what everybody's like.
What reading you guys habits read. Were. Yeah.
You know, everybody was getting triggered because they're like, oh my God,
I read this
how
book.
Dare you.
Oh, like, George in Captain Underpants was black in the originals, in the original book. So, you know, there was that 1%.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Getting on with the show, we're bringing back Who's Lit.
Okay.
So this week for Who's Lit, we've got a Sophia Sinclair. I want to say Sophia. I want to say Sophia.
It's definitely Sophia.
Sophia. Okay. So we're gonna go with Sophia. Sophia.
No, we're gonna go with Sophia.
We're gonna go with Sophia. Okay. It's fine. That's absolutely fine.
I thought
fine.
You said Sapphire because I spelled it as Sapphire.
I probably did, and I'm really sorry if I'm butchering your name.
And if it is Sophia, then sorry. Sophia.
Sophia.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Sophia.
Sophia.
Who's Lit this week, Ray?
So Who's Lit this week is the Whiting Award winner Sophia Sinclair's How to Say Babylon. Sophia is writer, poet, and she's written a Jamaican memoir about growing up in a rigid Rastafarian family ruled by her father, an itinerant, I didn't even know that word existed, but he's a reggae musician who damned her rebellion against the subjugation of women and how she found liberation in the discovery of her true voice, revealing the history of the Rastafarian religion and the far-reaching legacy of the colonial rule, along with other things. The historical novel is set in Jamaica to Dawn Davis. Basically, it was taken. Is it taken?
Taken.
It was like published.
Okay,
basically, so it's 37
Yeah, it's published by in the US by Simon & Schuster.
Yeah.
And in the UK, it's been won by Picador.
Yeah. Basically, her her author picture bangs, first of all.
Yeah.
Lighting, shadow, saturation, everything was on 10.
She's so great. She looks great.
A beautiful young woman. Alex is obviously very excited because...
She's from Montego Bay.
Can you just... If you like were to get married, Alex, would you like marry in Jamaica? Like, would you
get married in Jamaica?
Mm. Can you have like a destination wedding in Jamaica?
It probably wouldn't be Jamaica, but
where would it be?
I don't know. Probably be on a cliff somewhere.
You want to get married on a cliff?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
angles, innit?
Yeah, but like
angles and the wind.
What kind of Caucasian?
What do you mean?
You want to get married on a cliff? So people have to trek all the way up the cliff.
Yeah, trek up the way up the cliff
with their nice Gucci shoes. And Valentino dresses.
There could be.
What you say, I do.
There could be a chalet.
You're wayward.
There could be a chalet right
on the cliff.
Maybe.
Is a limo or like a Rolls Royce going to take up for us?
This is a future that has not even continued or created or begun.
I'm praying.
How are we talking about
something? In the next 3 years.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, maybe in Jamaica, maybe on another Caribbean island.
That'll be really nice. Maybe. I really want to go to Jamaica, so make sure that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to come to Zanzibar, so.
It's true. I will be. But at the same time, it might not be Jamaica.
Interesting.
It might be a smaller island.
Okay.
Who knows yet?
Oh.
Who knows yet?
Oh, he got money.
For my wedding.
Oh, he got money. Yeah. Anyways, that was a nice detour. But yeah, congratulations to Sophia Sinclair. And we look forward to reading your memoir and your poetry. And yeah, congratulations on your... book achievements.
Yeah.
We're really here for it, seeing another black woman get her coint.
Yeah.
And her money, catch her bag, collect her bread.
Collect it. All right, so mostly news this week.
Oh my God, this is,
it's a very long list.
We got a long list.
Not a very, very long list, but it's a long list. So Philip Pullman has revealed, his sequel, the second book of the Dust title.
Yeah.
Of the dust title.
The Book of Dust.
That's what it's called. Like, it's a dust. It's the title. The book. Anyway. So the Book of Dust, the second book in the trilogy, is going to be released in October, and it's called The Secret Commonwealth.
Fam.
So that'll be coming out in October, and it follows the life of Lyra Silvertongue, as you know. It's 20 years since the Belle Sauvage,
which is where Lyra was a baby.
Yeah, and then it's 7 years after the last book of the His Dark Materials trilogy.
How many years after that?
Seven years.
So 7 years post Lyra and Will go in their separate ways into their separate universes in the Amber Spyglass. I wonder, did Lord Asriel die in the Amber Spyglass? Because technically God died. I need to go back and reread them, but I'm so excited for this because I sat down with my friend and talked through La Belle Sauvage, and it had a lot, like half of it was just on a damn boat, but it had a lot. And as a film, that is going to be phenomenal. Yeah. However, we do have like the trailer
for Northern Lights has been released, and it looks great.
It looks really good.
And was Lord Asriel always black? He wasn't, was he?
No. So somebody said...
So who's the black man that's in there?
No, he's one of the deans in Oxford.
Oh.
What's his name? McGregor?
Okay, yeah.
What's his name? Is that his name? McGregor?
Cannot remember.
But yeah, he's Lord Asriel. The girl in Luther...
Ruth Wilson.
Yeah, is... Lady Coulter.
The evil woman.
The evil woman.
Yeah, she'll play her wicked. She'll play her well.
She'll play her really well. And I think somebody on Twitter said that Idris Elba should have been Azrael. He would have given that character the gravitas that, you know.
Yeah, but it's not everything Idris Elba can be in, you know what I mean? Like,
he's fine.
Yeah, but it's just one of them things, you know, when you start to like over have an actor who does the same thing every time. Sometimes make way for another black actor.
George Clooney. So we're talking about every white
man. I mean, most actors anyway, like in general. I'm just like, don't rinse them. But
make room for new people. Make room for new people. But they know they'll sell, so you know.
That's true. Yeah. But anyway, so you're excited about this book?
Fam, I'm really excited about this book. Mm-hmm. Oh, so many amazing books are coming out this year, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It could be very, very fun.
When is the series coming out? Is that yes, series, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder when it's coming out.
I think it'd be out later on this year.
Oh my God. Yo.
Later out this year. But and it should be fun. It would be very, very fun. I'm looking forward just to, you know, watching it as a proper series rather than the film.
When it's just like one damn film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we know one film and they cram the whole book
and they didn't even give it the ending it needed. The damn boy still survived. He should have been dead.
Yeah. But we'll see.
And there was no demons in the trailer.
In the trailer.
I was like, excuse me?
No. The demons definitely.
Where's Asta? Like,
I wanted to, yeah, what's Lyra's?
Asta.
It's not Asta. Isn't it Panteleimon?
Oh, so who's Asta?
Pygmalion. What's his name again?
Why did I think of Asta?
No idea. All right. While you figure that out. Have you got it? No? Cool. Michelle Obama.
Malcolm. In La Belle Sauvage. Oh, his demon is called Asta. Yeah, it's the laser, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, Michelle Obama, it was as if she's not already killing it in life already. She's continue reigning.
She's just like, yeah, and I will do this for the proletariat.
She's basically, so Michelle Obama joins YouTube's book panel discussion special. YouTube has tapped Michelle Obama to headline an original special, BookTube, slated to debut next month during Women's History Month. The former First Lady will discuss her best-selling memoir, Becoming, with a panel of YouTubers and tapping into BookTube.
Michelle, I do need your situation.
So on that panel, we've got Julesy, Ariel Bissett, Kat O'Keefe, Jesse George, and Francesca Ramsey. So she's Cheska Lee. Mm. And so she's been a YouTuber for a while now.
Yeah.
And she's written a book called That Escalated Quickly. And I'll be interested to see how this panel pans out.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Maybe next time Michelle Obama will do podcasts.
It'll be okay.
Yeah. That'll be really cool.
Yep, it'll be Elmi Liddy. But yeah, we're looking forward to that. We love you, Michelle. What? Ray, what's up with Ray?
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Let's see. The Oscars.
Woo!
So Regina King and Mahershala Ali won for Best Supporting Actress and Actors.
Roles?
Yeah. Oh, roles. Because they've not gendered it, have they?
Who?
Why the roles? What do you mean?
Because they won for the role of Best Supporting Actors and Best Supporting Actresses.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Even though, to be very frank, it's fine. They should be in the main category.
They should have been in the main category. But Regina King did an amazing job in If Beale Street Could Talk. I have to say that like she was very, very key. Cause at the very beginning, when she was nominated for it, for across the many awards that she was nominated this year, I was thinking, what did she do in If Beale Street Could Talk? Then I realized, and then when I started thinking back through the film, that I was like, wow, yeah, she did actually... She did a lot. She had the level of empathy, the strength of her character. Yeah. It was just amazing.
Everyone's been talking about this film and I really haven't sat down to watch it.
It's so good.
I'm going to.
But it's like, it's one of those, it's very artsy.
Oh, is
that? So it has very amazing scenes.
Yeah, nice cinematography.
Amazing cinematography. It's great.
Does it have like brooding silences like Moonlight?
Yeah, in places, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good. Very good.
They all do. Even like 12 Years a Slave, it literally was like, I'm telling you, you could like extract all the silences from that movie.
it's a good film. It's a good film. I unfortunately haven't seen The Green Book to see Mahershala Ali's performance in that.
No, but Spike Lee really got really upset that won. Apparently it's, I think it's more like a racial thing with regards to the fact it's messaging. I haven't watched the film. I look forward to watching it just to see. Like, I really like to watch everything that wins Best Picture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who won Best Picture this year?
That film.
The Green Book?
Yeah, The Green Book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was very surprised, actually, because I literally thought it might be Vice or The Favourite.
That's what I was thinking. I thought it would be The Favourite.
Yeah. But, I mean, what's her name won for Best Actress for The Favourite? And that speech was really cool.
Yeah.
I really liked her speech.
Yeah.
But yeah.
She was really good. Spike Lee won the Oscar. Well, Black Klansman won the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
He was doing Spike Lee with his purple suit. And, you know,
jumping up.
His first Oscar in his whole career.
That's crazy.
And I'm thinking that's so weird because obviously he's got a huge back catalogue of like films.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, like, Black Klansman is definitely not
the one that should have won.
His best of all the, of
the portfolio, yeah, yeah.
So for him to win for this, it's good that he's won, but then you're also like
It's like
with the Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like he shouldn't have won for The Revenant or whatever.
Yeah.
He should have, like, so many. He's done so much.
So many films. It's just about the timing.
Yeah.
And about what it was up against.
And he was like nominated every time. Just like there was a point, Kate Winslet was like one of the most nominated actresses as well. Like, and then you just win it for something random. They always say, like, the one that you win for is not the one that you plan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. But yeah.
So congratulations
to everybody. And then the amazing, beautiful black women who won for Black Panther's costume design and production design.
Ruthie
Carter and Hannah Beechler.
Yeah. I think she also directed Beyonce's Lemonade.
Yeah.
You go, girl.
Yep.
So you stand.
Go for it. We loved it. It was very melanated this year. Did you see all the drama around Bill Carter? He's an actor and he wore like a tuxedo with a huge dress.
Oh yeah, I thought it was. What was the controversy?
People were like, you know, it's the destruction of the black man.
Oh, let the man live. What is the black man?
Masculinity and all that. And you're just like, I just didn't like let him live. He was living like living.
He was living his best
literally,
life.
He's shown up to every awards ceremony this year, just looking sharp. When I've never seen someone wear a cape like that.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah, that cape one. Ooh.
Was that the, I can't remember which awards it was.
That was just,
but it was amazing. Elite. He was just coming through.
He's like, yeah, I came here.
But you think to yourself, like, if he's comfortable and he looks great, what is the problem? Like, what's the problem? You got all these people that are so dusty really trying to give their 2 or 10 pence worth about something that doesn't consign you. You know what I mean? It doesn't actually matter.
Mind your business.
Yeah, mind your business. You weren't there. None of us were there.
You behaved from outside of the club, but you can't even get in.
Some of you even hitting from outside of the country and the time zone, please.
Can you imagine?
You know?
Bastardization of masculinity.
The destruction. I'm just like, come on now, man. You guys, we're 2019. We're past that.
Maybe it does need to be destroyed just so people can rebuild it again.
honestly.
But that's sweet. Congratulations to all the melanated people. In the words of Issa Rae.
I'm rooting for everybody black.
I'm rooting for everybody black.
Yep. Okay. So the BBC and ITV have teamed up together to create this online streaming platform, which is set to quote unquote take on Netflix. And I'm just a bit like,
it's a little too late.
I'm not even sure it's a little too late. I'm just thinking to myself, why are two competing stations, networks even in the UK,
the enemy of your enemy is your friend,
combining together to make a streaming platform to take on another streaming platform?
The enemy of your enemy is your friend.
I'm just like, what is this?
It's rubbish. But then again, right, my only issue is, cool, you want a British Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it's going to be more than a British Netflix.
What shows do you have on there? What am I going to watch when I have a smart TV
right,
so that I can record anything that is on television and watch it at any time I want.
So what they're saying is that, you know, they're going to have like a lot of BBC's most popular series, such as McMafia, McMafia, Les Miserables, and some of the comedy series like Gavin and Stacey.
So are we not watching this on BBC iPlayer?
This is what I'm saying. This is my confusion now. I'm thinking to myself, what if everybody's already paying their tax to the TV license for the BBC iPlayer, which is BBC in general.
Yeah.
So you've got the iPlayer. What if it's going to be an additional subscription?
Why?
It doesn't really make much sense. You may as well take that. Oh, I'm not, like, I don't know.
They were just rushing.
Yeah. So they're going to either have to incorporate the tax into the subscription.
Yeah.
Somehow. I don't know how you would do that, like, systematically. But if that's the case, then that's the case. But it doesn't make any sense. I'm really confused. I don't know what shows are going to be on there, but I really hope that they do some original.
I hope they put Doctor Who on there, from very early.
They would put Doctor, like the first.
Yeah, like, when the first Doctor.
Yeah, but like, I'm also thinking, like, I want to see like original
content.
Drama. I want to see original
cool.
pieces. I want to see like documentary. I want to see like all of that stuff from the UK.
Yeah.
And it's centered.
If they
into
did
Britbox,
original content,
that'd be amazing.
That is not on BBC, like, the television mm-hmm. program, then that will be better. Like, yeah. if they literally were like invested in original British content, mm-hmm. British actors and British talent, that will be something I might consider.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I have Prime and Netflix.
We got Prime, we got Netflix.
Like, there's, I'm really not going to be, you know, swayed easily.
You know, like, it, obviously in the States they have
streaming as well.
In the States they have HBO and Hulu and all that stuff. Yeah. But, and like, you know, look at what HBO is producing. So you need to remember, like, I'm just thinking, I'm waiting and seeing.
They better not bring us some NX Modern Only Fools and Horses rubbish, yeah.
Oh, wait. Promising fantastic value, the Beeb's general director also reassured license fee payers that their money won't be going to the new venture BritBox. So I'm... Okay, next thing. But I don't understand.
Oh,
so hopefully something will come up.
The BritBox.
The BritBox.
A rubbish name. Why can't they just call it The Box?
I don't know.
The Box. That's a good one, The Box.
And finally... Have you been seeing all this brouhaha with David Lamy?
Filmmaker, documentarian,
Stacey Dooley.
So Stacey Dooley is a white savior person.
A white savior person, from what the internet
Paris.
Has been saying.
I don't really know her.
So she's filming for Comic Relief out in which part of Africa? I'm not sure.
They didn't even specify.
Yeah.
I don't even think they even specified.
I think it was Uganda. And the picture was taken that she shared on Instagram of her holding a black child.
Yeah.
And David Lammy, made a comment that mm-hmm. this is white, essentially, I'm paraphrasing.
Rightfully so.
This is white saviorism. Yeah. Obviously, the internet agreed. And obviously, everybody, it became quite divided.
It's the Comic Relief Twitter person that came with vim.
Oh my God.
That came with vim. Like, yeah, well, we approached you to do something. We're still waiting for the meeting.
Yeah. And I think,
blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I was like, eh?
But the thing that this is what I think David Lammy, he said, yeah, he did get approached, and he said at the current state of the way that things are now, he wouldn't do it, but he has to see that there will be significant change in the way that, you know, things are kind of produced and promoted via Comic Relief. And like, you know what I mean, Comic Relief isn't a bad thing, but at the same time,
it's how you do it and the intention behind it.
And Lammy did make a good point about saying, well, there are millions of black people in Africa who are, you know,
who need voices and need platforms, yeah,
and are well off as well, mm-hmm. and are, like, you know, living a healthy and stable life.
Yeah,
get them in front of the camera to do.
Why
the
do you need this
stuff.
White woman?
Yeah, exactly. It's about having, obviously, it's about having the face of the UK to
that's,
kind of say
yeah,
it.
That's the thing. But it's the most white, like, oh my, it's mad because it's like. This woman apparently knows nothing about the lives of these people. Just goes out because she can make a documentary. Do you understand the race relations? Do you understand racial politics? Do you understand how people live? Do you understand the culture? No, you don't. But you will go there and take these photos of you hugging up a poor child so that you, as well as the rest of Britain, can feel happy and can feel at ease at, oh, look at this amazing thing that I'm doing. I'm helping all of these people. When you don't even care about their lives. Mm. You don't care about the black lives that are around you in Great Britain. Yeah. That literally live right next door to you.
Yeah.
You are not giving the platform that you have to other black people. But you're very concerned with an anonymous young kid in another country. And she was like, is it because I'm white? She actually tweeted, yeah, like, if it's like, because I'm white, then why don't you come out here? I'm just like, wow.
It's that whole individualism thing. It's just, I find it really, it's just jarring, man. And you think to yourself, at the same time, you wouldn't like, it would be weird if you went to a deprived part of London or the UK and picked up a random child away from their parents.
Can you imagine?
And their family. You know, obviously we don't have any context of whether this child is orphaned or not or whatever. But you just don't, it's just not.
And you know, kids are living in poverty in Britain, like under the poverty line in Britain.
Yeah.
And imagine you go and you just start taking pictures.
Exactly. I mean, charity starts at home, but at the same time, it's just like, well, we've got
wild.
It isn't wild. Like, it's just, yeah, I just find it really strange. But then also it's that whole, it's the perspective and the classist and the imperialism and all of that stuff. It's just like,
but it's, yeah, all of these really sensitive topics, mm-hmm, that clearly the woman is not averse in. Do, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what makes it really unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
But
so, yeah, that's, yeah, kind of what happened, and that's been on the news. But it does lead quite nicely onto our main book. So today's main book is The Long Song by Andrea Levy. Amazing book. The book centers around a slave named July, and it's about her documenting and retelling her story, mm-hmm, for the reader. And it's just an amazing story based around the abolition of, yep, slavery in the UK, well, the UK abolition of slavery in all its colonies, and the slave rebellions, and generally following the life of July, who had been through a very tumultuous life, and, yeah, her experience of transitioning from slave to free, and how it typically left the slaves in the Caribbean.
So weird, this book came out in 2010, you know?
It did come out in 2010, it's very timely.
That's very...
Yeah.
It's very recent,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just found it was very pertinent, mm, you know what I mean? Like, I think there will always be a space for this kind of book.
Yeah.
I do think. But what do you think about slave stories is one of the main questions I had for you.
Slave stories. Khalifa. So when I was reading this, I find it very hard. I think we've touched on this before. Like, whenever I think about slave stories, I always place it in, like, Southern America. You know, that Django type Southern American slave aesthetic. But clearly that's not what a slave story is. I guess it's a part of it,
mm-hmm,
but it's not it all. And so I had to really change my perspective, like I did when we did that book, Washington Black. And similarly to this, I was like, ah, so we are in a very different climate. I think slave stories have a particular space for world history, not just for the culture. I think it's much more important for world history, just as how we are always reminded and told about other past traumatic experience that have happened to other people, whether it's the Holocaust, even like more recent, Palestine and Israel conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly in the future, we might even have some things regarding the Arab Spring, the Arab uprising, and the different types of civil wars that took place, the genocides in certain African countries.
Mm.
And I do think that slave narrative, I don't want to call it slave narrative, just the historical occurrence of what happened to
enslaved black people.
Enslaved black people is important for world history, mm-hmm. because that is how I find that certain WASPs, they do not have respect for black lives and black past collective trauma. Mm-hmm. And because they don't have respect for it, they fail to acknowledge it. Mm. They don't want to acknowledge what happened in the past. Mm. And whereas they will make every film under the sun each year about the Holocaust. Not to play past traumatic experience Olympics, but to actually make a point that, simply put, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And the mere fact that I think it's important to have this narrative in these kinds of books. However, it is not the only book that we should have.
Do you know what?
To represent our history.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what? At the same time, I think that a lot of the stories, the stories that are centered around slave narratives, the enslaved, I think that in the long song, what really stuck out to me was the way that certain aspects of white behavior has just prevailed throughout history.
Auntie Caroline with her laziness.
Listen, Auntie Caroline with her laziness. So they were basically the mistress of the plantation is called Caroline Mortimer. And Caroline Mortimer has basically taken July from her mum.
Literally, guys, like they were walking to, like, I don't know, the shop here, July and her mother Kitty. Mm-hmm. And then Caroline Mortimer is new in Jamaica and she's, you know, they're in a little carriage going somewhere. Oh, I'm so bored. Let's take, like,
I want to see
where the niggers are. And we're going to use the N word in this episode because that is exactly what the book says, right? Yeah, we're giving you allowance. Anyway, so yeah, she literally was like, they stopped. Oh, this little nigger is so cute. Mm. Oh, I like this little nigger. Mm-hmm. She's so adorable. Yeah. So basically, she's talking to her brother, John Hawthorne, who...
John Mortimer.
I swear it's Hawthorne.
Well, she's Caroline Mortimer.
Are you sure? Maybe she's Caroline Hawthorne. Was she on?
No.
Anyway, Mortimer. Yeah, so John now. And then I remember the one thing that she said that just blew me away. She was like, do you think that, is it Agnes, John's wife?
Yeah.
Do you think Agnes will like take to her? And then John's like, Agnes don't like little niggas anymore. She's lost her love for little niggas. I literally was like, what the fuck?
But this is the thing. And this is what I mean. Like, it's this whole, she basically picked up July and just said, all right, what's your name? And
that
she's
whole
like, oh, her name's July. Oh, what kind of name is that for a person? okay, we're gonna call you Marguerite, and then she's calling her Marguerite for all of her life. But obviously, to the slaves, she was July. To Caroline
and her fellow wasps,
She was Marguerite.
Go on, yeah.
But the one thing I was gonna say that kind of like passed down all the way through is that when you go to a job interview as a black person or you're working in these white spaces and they're just calling you by
whatever name, or they're
emailing you and like whatever name. Someone even spelled Alex wrong, guys. Alex is not necessarily with a Y.
Alex.
I'm like, why would you? And they did it consistently. I'm like, why did you? Why? Like, I mean, I don't understand that. I feel like that's just competency in itself. Visibly like, black name, quote unquote, whatever that means.
Not a white English name.
Yeah, and they'll just continue calling you that name.
I get called Rafia all the time.
Yeah, and nobody wants to actually say, all right, I'm going to sit down and learn this person's name. And you know what I mean? And this is what I was looking at when I was when I was reading the story. I was like, wow. Like, so many things have just been passed down generationally.
Because
we talk about, like, black people having all these generational
curses.
But what about
the
white generational curse?
They still have the master massa type of personality,
What about not knowing how to say somebody's name and not caring?
fam.
What about standing in front of an Instagram and holding this black child and trying to be the savior and then putting the child down and continuing.
Putting the child down and continuing.
And like Agnes doesn't like these little niggas anymore.
Right?
This is what I mean.
But she used to like little niggas.
Because it's fine when you're going
when
to...
When you're in Africa, you know, in Africa generally.
Exactly. When you're going to...
Make your little Africa documentary and your
or
program.
South America or yep. the Caribbean and then you've got the... I remember when I was...
you like little niggas in London? No, you don't.
When I was in... when I was teaching in Reunion, yeah.
Yeah.
There were, I lived with loads of Spanish people and they went to Madagascar.
Yeah.
And like, because I was like, oh, we've got to go to Madagascar. It's just this thing that we have to do. And I was
like,
God. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going. Because, I mean, I just thought it's going to be very long. You know what I mean? I was doing an Alex. But then
Alex.
Also, I was very much like, I kind of know what these environments are like. I don't want to go. I know the energy it does take up and stuff. So I thought, no, I'm not going to do it. So they go, they have a great time. They come back with all their quote unquote horror stories. You know, there were flies everywhere.
They're like,
we couldn't drink the water from the tap. Can you imagine? I was like, okay. Then they showed me pictures of them in this little Malagash like field or like village. And this is like, my white housemate is just there with all these little black kids around her.
It makes me sick. And they all took
several photos of it. And like one of my other friends, American guy, he was like, he's white, but he was like, he's like, it's weird, right?
It makes me sick.
It's like, it's strange.
It's
like,
the GARP year kids, you know? It's because if you want to give charity and you want to help people, you will not do it for the world stage.
Yeah.
You know you won't.
Yeah.
You will just be good. Be good, plug in Beyonce. But it's true. And so for you to take, there is an inherent superiority complex in which white people go into other people's lands and think we've come here to help. And so many people within the colonial period had this mentality of going, like certain books tell you it. So many people go into these lands thinking, we have come here to save you. Even if things fall apart. Mm-hmm. Certain people in, what's that book? Heart of Darkness. It's this civilizing mission.
Yeah.
Civilizing mission, because they've already said to themselves that the way in which these people live is not civilized. Therefore, we have to, as people who, you know, have manners and have coin and have class, we need to go and save these people by enslaving them, putting them to work. Honestly. Making them the house niggers.
This is it. And it was so...
I want you... Remember when... Like, so in this book, Caroline was like teaching July to be more white, just like her other maid who died like 2 weeks after she came to Jamaica because she really wasn't cut out for it.
No, do you know what she did?
No,
she didn't shit. She couldn't shit.
She couldn't shit on
sorry,
the boat.
Sorry, guys.
Pipe.
I'm
so
sorry
what happened?
Her, but like, she couldn't shit.
Like... that whole paragraph, I was like, what is going on here?
She basically...
Did it come out of her mouth?
Yeah. You know, you think to yourself, like, some people just...
I just was like, I don't understand what happened.
Some people just aren't cut out for the journey. You know what I'm saying? Like,
so basically, on the boat, she refused to poop, yeah?
She took herself from England to this tropical country. And she didn't want to poop over the side of the...
the boat?
The ship.
Yeah.
Because obviously she couldn't poo where Caroline pooed. Whatever. I'm just thinking to myself, this is so bizarre.
I think because at the end it was like, and then it came out of the other hole, and I was like, ah.
Yeah, basically. So she backed up. It backed up everywhere, and then she died. And when she died, it all came out of her mouth. And
trash.
I was just like, this is just.
Mary.
Gross.
Mary wasn't about it. Mary couldn't handle it, man.
Because who sent her?
Who sent. Well, Caroline.
Literally, who sent her to go and to go and be made in like the Caribbean?
But yeah, so. And
so
then,
this is God saying to you, this is a wrong thing.
Want your situation.
And all that is going to come to you on this trip, this family.
Shit.
It's going to be problems.
I
think that aside from the generational curses of white people, I think that the book is, it does have I really did end up loving July, like, just because she was so
she was so particular in this in the way that she kind of like
told the story,
and you know, she told the story in this way that like old Jamaican women do.
Oh my God, did you see, know that part? So there was a part when like her son, so she's the narration is very strange in that she's writing about writing the story, right? And so she's writing as an older July with her son Thomas.
So Andrea Levy is writing about July writing the story.
No, but not Andrea Levy, because it's told in the first person.
No, she's writing the Andrea Levy's writing the book.
Yeah.
The long song.
Yeah.
But she's writing
as
the,
July.
She's writing the story of July writing the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was a part when this is how I know, Caribbean and African women are just the same.
Yeah.
Because they were discussing about ink and how, you know, you need to tap the ink feather or whatever so that you're not putting so much ink on the paper and it's smudging everywhere. And this woman was not having it.
Mm.
And she lives in her son's home. Best believe she took her purse, all the belongings that like belong to her. She's like, I'm not going to take anything he's given me.
Yeah.
And they were arguing over pen and paper and she just got up. And so Thomas had to call his wife Lillian to come and stop her. And she's like, no, I'm gonna go, I'm leaving. And it is such, like, I literally saw like so many like of my African aunts and my mother in that. It's like, oh, so you thought I can't go anywhere. Where can you go? You're an old woman, sit your ass down. Hilarious.
It's so funny because it was just like, she was so like,
vivacious.
It's so vivacious because when you get to that stage, I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of the mum in the brief one, just Life of Oscar Wilde kind of thing. Like,
oh,
they grow up, they go through all their shit, and then they only have their children try telling them shit, and they're
walk out of it. And I'm like, where are you going? You can't.
And they will move mad because they're like, I've been through worse. Yeah. And
but I'm like, you can't go near it. Yeah. You know you can't. Sit down.
They just bring her back.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. But like I fell in love with July, but at the same time, there was a lot that came through the story with regards to colorism and like while you kind of know that this stuff exists, to the level in which it was happening,
mm-hmm.
and like the strategic, systematic stuff that even the people within the society just knew, it was a mess. So like July was basically always saying that she was a mulatto because her
she was mixed race.
Her
dad was John, essentially.
John.
Yeah, her dad was John. Kitty, remember in the beginning, Kitty was raped by the slave master. John.
Yeah, because I think it was.
But you never see that.
Yeah,
it was John.
I thought it was the overseer.
Was it the overseer?
But anyway.
Because he came once, because remember when Kitty was giving birth?
Yeah.
And then he came, so I'll stop making that noise.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Blah, blah, blah. But that was him. It was definitely John.
Yeah.
But you never... It's so weird how, like, even though if you come from, like, a slave mother... You're a slave.
Yeah.
Like, you're a slave. And it's just, you are enslaved, sorry. And it's wild that these slave masters and these people who would just literally sleep with these women, not even sleep, just completely
rape
these women. Yeah. And then they have children and they are essentially just, they have no connection because it's that connection is not there. They don't look at these, they look at them as commodities to further their economic advancement by labor.
Mm-hmm.
And the one of the major parts that I saw this in this book, I was literally so abhorred, was on that road when Kitty and July was younger. And remember, John pulled up her dress
yeah.
and said, things like, look at these legs.
Yeah.
Aren't they like tree trunks? Aren't they so amazing and hardened and phenomenal? When this one was younger, there was another buyer and he gave me her like for, you know, a small amount.
Yeah.
Didn't know what he was losing.
Yeah.
And grew up to be a robust, big person. Yeah. And yeah, we can put this one to work. Oh, and then he said, imagine having these legs in stockings.
Yeah, in Britain. They wouldn't have it.
Oh, it'd be horrific. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
He said he was filled with mirth at this banter that he was cracking. I was like, uh-huh. And I was like, it just reminded me how just talking about the generational curses of white people, yeah, the things that they carry, is the fact that they strip other people of
their humanity.
They do not see. And this is why you have issues like people, us not being given platforms or people speaking on our behalves, because it's the mere fact that you cannot relate to a story or somebody if you do not see them as human.
There we go.
If you don't see them as human, you will strip them of all of that before you even know their name.
Yeah.
You won't even be bothered to know their name. Mm-hmm. You will not give them the attention to know their name.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes sense. You just don't see us as human.
You don't see them as human. You don't end up...
No matter how much you want to save poor people and go to some land in Africa, you know, because you don't even bother to know what country it is.
Yeah.
No matter how, like, that is just your ego.
Yeah.
And that is just you wanting to show the world, oh, I can help people. But it's almost like, for them, it's just helping animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same amount of vim I would give to the the animal one. Oh, or is that NSPCC? It's one of them that's animals, not children.
Okay.
It's that same energy that they will commit to, you know, saving the lives of a puppy in shelter.
Mm-hmm.
They will do that same to young children.
Yeah.
Young impoverished black kids.
Mm-hmm.
So when you cannot differentiate that
between the two,
it's mad.
But that's the thing, like, it was just, it was actually, I have to say, it was troubling reading. It was actually quite troubling in places.
Because it was quite funny.
Because there were funny bits, because I feel like... Because the thing is, it's like you will watch it or like look at it and think to yourself, right, like, yes, it's a very serious topic. Slavery was an abomination. Like, that should never have happened or occurred. Well, chattel slavery, as it happened in the West, should never have occurred in history. But then when I'm reading it and I'm just looking at the psychology of... being a slave master, the psychology of being an enslaved person, the psychology of all of that, the upstairs, downstairs sort of situation.
Inside Negro, outside Negro.
And the thing is, like, it's so reminiscent of the British class system, especially the British class system across.
Because Almost mirrors the
European, all that stuff. And, like, when you think about shows like, say, Downton Abbey, and then you look at a slave narrative like The Long Song, and you think... So they have all these servants and all these people in the house.
They're in the basement.
They're in the basement. Because the thing is, like, but in Downton Abbey, for example, obviously they're employed to work in the house of the manor, of the lady's house, of the lord's house, his mansion and whatever, in his estate. Whereas when you're part of the enslaved, you're a slave and you're expected to work there.
It's not even expected. You see what I mean? It's like, it's almost like a birthright. It's not even a birthright because you're not even human. Mm. You are like... You're like a horse.
Yeah,
but buy a horse, exactly, and the horse does your bidding. Yeah, it's property. You are not even human enough to be a butler.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You are chattel, essentially.
You're literally property instead. Yeah. And then because you're property, it's like...
You don't have a say.
You're treated pretty much... Not treated pretty much. We expect to do the exact same things that somebody who is a lady's maid in waiting or a cook or whatever... in the house of like of a lord in Yorkshire is, and you're just doing the exact same thing in the Caribbean or the southern states of America or Latin America or whatever, but you're being whipped
and you are imagine you are a thinking person.
Yeah.
You think and you feel and you hurt and you have joy,
deprive them of everything,
and then you're stripped of humanity. To me, I'm, oh my god, it's something that I can't even fathom. It's just, crazy.
Absolutely bizarre.
And there was a part when I realized how the fact that, you know, generational curses, not just on white people, but how we have somehow learned to be in these white places from time. Do you know what I mean? It's like, remember when in the beginning, July messed up Caroline's dress and she was almost putting on a show. So she walks in and she like goes on the floor and says, "Miss, you know, like I mess up your dress, hit me, beat me. Oh yes, take off your slipper, hit me. Yes, beat me. I messed up the dress." And Liz Tasha was like, "I know this woman was going to beat me." Because like, she don't even beat people, first of all. She'll hit you with her slipper. She don't have a cane. Because last time she tried to, you know, hit me, the damn thing hit her eye.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
she don't know what she's doing. Yeah. So it's this theatrical thing that, good heavens, it's like, I just imagine being in like a toxic corporate environment.
Yeah.
And you just have to play your white self all the time.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Further to your email below, we would like to.
Even when you're just prostrated in front of them.
Yeah.
You see what I mean, like to their face. Yeah. Sometimes you have to see them. Be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to do that. Or you wait until there's a social event and then you go to them and tell them X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And it just becomes this again. It's a, this performance. This
performance.
Thing.
Yeah.
And it was just yeah.
And these slaves had to perform.
They had to do
to them. Masters, they had to perform. And then imagine performing so much for your day. You go into your hut, you don't even know yourself because you don't even are not given the space to be yourself.
Yeah. So like, you don't know yourself. You've already been stripped, your humanity's already been stripped away.
Mate, what's
you
left?
Have no thing, but then you're still like,
you're still feeling,
you're still hurting. Feeling and hurting and all these, yeah. And going through all of that. So there was like a huge aspect to the book about love. And Marguerite July, she basically ended up in a relationship with the, later on in the book she becomes gets into a relationship with one of the new overseers, who is a British Baptist man. Yeah. And they quote unquote fall in love, and they go about their day. Obviously they have to do it in secret because it is quite, it's like a while.
Did he really love her? He didn't love her.
I think the way it was written, he loved her. Like, okay. He loved her. Like,
but it's like loving your favorite horse.
True. Because
it's
the thing
like
is,
having a pet.
So this guy, he came under the pretense of being, the pretext of being a, he was a missionary, like he's from a Christian family.
Yeah.
His dad is a bishop, a vicar, priest, religious man. And he comes and he says, you know, I'm coming to speak to the Negro, like treat them as an equal, like give them, liberate them, free them, give them their
civilizing mission.
Like give them their, like, you know, they should never have been under the rubbish. The binding issue.
Oh God!
An abomination that was slavery. And, you know, and under our Christ and God and the power of the Bible that is invested in all this stuff. Yeah, that's all he was coming with.
Glory
right?
be to God.
All of that stuff. Yeah. Amen. And I was like to myself, this guy is moving mad. And he was just like, you know, like he wanted to. He really came on this civilizing mission,
which is what they always do.
But he generally tried. I feel like in the beginning he came with that whole, it's that whole thing. Oh, you're gonna go with that idealism and that, like that missionary stuff. You'll see after. That's kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. Here. He went through. He ended up in a relationship with a covert relationship with July. Married Caroline. Was too tired for Caroline. After he had already...
Caroline couldn't handle that heat, man.
Yeah. Had a baby with
then,
July.
When the slaves revolted... Well, sorry, when they got their freedom and the slaves revolted...
Yeah.
And then they were like, actually, we don't want to work.
No.
Did he not become disillusioned?
Yeah, he became disillusioned.
Did he really see them as equals?
And I was thinking the way that he's changed so quickly, because I think it was he said, you know what, over Christmas, he's like, the obviously you're all being paid, etc. we just need the cane crops to come down. It needs to come down. It'll be 6 days work. You'll get paid for the task, etc., etc., etc. So then you have, like, obviously you got one. Think about it, just like one auntie chucked up.
No, oh, I'm master. Good. Like, me good.
Like, master, I have to go to market.
Like, I've got gout.
Like, it's Christmas. My daughter's coming from the south of Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't really be out here
working
doing that. Then they're like, so more of them would say no. And then I think they had to have one representative, like Negro. The one representative Negro.
Labor force.
He was basically like, we want to work 4 days.
He was laying down the law.
He was like 4 days. Like, he's like, well, it could only be done in six. The guy was like, it has to be done in six. And then he's like, it's been 4 days.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, so they're arguing back and forth about 4 days and 6 days. And then for me, it was the dramatic switch of being like, you ungrateful Negroes, you live on our land.
Yeah, see, he didn't see them as equals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then he'll still go back to July and be like, I love you, July.
Can you imagine? Because this is it. This is we the white baby, man come to do.
And I was just like, wow. So
he was spun.
So I was actually spun because I was like, you know what? Like, I was like, all right, I'm going to give him the benefit. Like, I thought, let me give him the benefit of the doubt. Like,
this is
like,
our ally.
Let me give the benefit of the doubt. I'm thinking, like, you come, you're Christian, like, you weren't really there at the tours of bondage. Your dad sent you a letter saying that he was so proud of you for being there. All this stuff, like, you had everything. I was like, okay,
minging.
Cool. I was like, okay, cool. And then you turn around and call him, like, you filthy niggas. Like,
lazy niggas.
Like, lazy niggas, because he went crazy because he tried to get them to
under his control.
And because obviously he couldn't beat them anymore. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't be beaten into doing it because there was one scene where one of the slaves was about to get beaten and they grabbed the whip
and dashed
it into the river almost threw the overseer in with it. But like, it was just one of those things, and then he went kind of crazy and he started to like go into the field and chop the top of his office. So you think he had like a fever of some kind. And then he turned to July and just like gave her a really contemptuous look. Yeah. And that's when Caroline took him and said, you know, when anybody visited him, don't mention anything about Negroes, don't mention anything about this. And then
they went to Britain and they took July's baby.
Yeah, the baby.
Poor
that she
little
had.
Emily, who probably became Belle.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's
no,
it.
He didn't. But that's probably how Belle came, the story of Belle.
Like, I was like, this is actually how.
They took a little mixed race thing to Britain. That child will never know.
To imagine. Chester. It wasn't even London. In them times it was whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it was just, it became...
Poor little Emily.
Yeah, it was... So reading that and just saying, like, you know what? So she loved him. She loved the man.
I can't believe...
They loved each other.
She loved him.
Yeah, because she had this thing about being a mulatto. She was basically like, I'm a mulatto. And it's like, oh, well, even Caroline at one point said, well, who cares about all of that? At the end of the day, you're black.
You're black. Caroline's
just like, listen. Caroline's like, what is all this?
You're still a maid.
What is all this black? What is
I
this?
See you in your maid outfit.
What is it? She's like, you know... She's like literally saying, like, you know, mulatto, quadroon, octoroon, whatever. You want to mix. At the end of the day, you're still a Negro and you're still were an enslaved person at the end of the day. So that is, and it was one of those things that kind of make, like, and it's reminiscent of conversations that we have today. Yeah. Everyone's having these conversations.
With colorism, light skin, dark skin,
everyone's having,
and it's still there, you know, it's after the conversations, all these years.
The conversation we're having with mixed race people about their identity and where they you know, will they, won't they, where they stand, all this different stuff, and
it's insane after all these years this is still
exactly
something that is so prominent in our culture and just like, general discussion.
Yeah, it really made me tired. I was very much like, do you know what, like, I really wish, like, I started, in my head, I started to reimagine slavery. Like,
okay.
Okay,
I'm following.
Now, imagine that it wasn't steeped in the capitalist venture or nature that it was.
So deeply entrenched in,
and the racism. Mm-hmm. And the white supremacy. But
so what do you have? So workers who don't get paid? I don't know.
So basically, okay, so the white people went to these islands and they created their manors and they have their plantations and they do all these things. Now, if the African people had been indentured, it's just as bad, but they still got paid, mm-hmm. and they still had their worth and they still had their merchant value and they still had their own rights. I just always wonder, like, I wonder where we would be.
So I don't even think that they would go there, because if you inherently see the value of people, would you have the gall and the temerity and the audacity to go onto their land and just build your mansion?
But then again, it's like they were like a lot of
because there's a thing.
There were a lot of stories where a lot of West African people were sold. Mm-hmm. By their tribes, or they were caught,
they were caught and then sold on.
But what if that was different? I'm not trying to condone it.
What if it was voluntary?
You're going over to the Caribbean or whatever.
You're gonna work,
and you're gonna, you know, you'll be an indentured servant. You'll get paid your rent. You can build up. You'll be your own person, but we're putting you here
an immigrant who is working.
Yeah,
because
you were displaced from whatever tribe you were in Africa. Do you see what I mean? And you went to another tropical island.
I
don't know. Yeah,
it would be like a modern now, no? Like in terms of, if you voluntarily being like, oh, I'm gonna go to this country. Because I know a few wasps be there and they need labor.
In a part of me, it feels like several steps forward.
However, I think there is still, like, what I'm saying is that there is still, there is no equality there. You are still a worker not even a worker on the same level.
Mm.
You are still a worker working for somebody, as we are now, but we're not on the same level. It's not even like a massive economy where there are companies. It's you're working for like an individual in their home, for their business in their home. I don't know if it's like a multi big, I don't know. I just feel like it'd be maybe a modern now, but then the class system will still be there inherently just by the mere fact of work and labor.
The class system would be there. Because the thing is, there was a point where they talked about the indentured servants that came over to Jamaica after. When obviously they couldn't afford to man the land anymore because there were no slaves in order to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
They really got
this free labor from us.
They really did. And, you know, they were like, there was that bit, he was like, oh, I've got an idea, Caroline. And she was like, what? And he was like,
Caroline was such an
idiot, fam. She pissed me off. It's just her jarringness. I just always pictured her in a Frink Frilly costume. I couldn't picture her in anything else because she was just a waste man.
I remember she was always on her daybed. Just sleeping.
And this man always in his hammock, listening to the mockingbirds. Is this what you came to Jamaica to do? You didn't come to fix the plantation? Anyway, or set the people free. So he was like, Caroline, I have an idea. Have you heard about this whole indentured servitude thing? She's like, no, what's that? She's like, you know, he's like, the Indians... he said Indians specifically, they will come over and they will work and we just pay them a wage and they can work the land. And she was like, oh, that could be a good idea. And he was like, yeah, because, you know, they've never been enslaved, so they don't have the mindset of, they don't have any hang-ups about the white man. Essentially, that's what I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. That bit. She said, they don't have any, they don't see the white man in the same way. So they will come and do it. But as long as they're getting paid, they will do it. And she's like, oh, that could be good. And these people having these conversations just in their room.
Yeah, just like in their house.
Like, oh, that would
be good. Just like how they be having these board meetings.
But people have these conversations like at home. Golf club. Should we buy this house in this area? Because the area price is going to go up in 5 years' time. Oh, that could be good.
That could be cute.
Yeah, the area is filled with these kind of people. These are the conversations that people are having about commodities, and it just made me feel like
sickening.
It's just like, you know, everything was just never in the control of the people in the island. But yeah, it was quite a telling book, to be honest.
Slave narratives just always make me a bit.
The thing is, and I feel like they're so necessary
because they're like
a blueprint for how and why. Obviously, it's a historical novel, not a textbook.
But I do.
So
think
there are
that
so, there are some fabricated bits.
We always
bits,
read
but
these messages, but really, actually, we shouldn't be. I think we should, but I personally feel like it's the white people that should be reading these books, not us. I think we need to read it, but it shouldn't be our own okay, yeah. our only thing we read. Because yeah. that's horrible, just looking like this is your history.
That's fair.
It's not it, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not the only thing.
That's fair.
And I just want low-key white people to read these books like so they can, like, this is what your people did, you know? And stop trying to forget about it. Oh, we're still talking about racism. I just don't know why we... Because it happened and it affected families and legacies. And you need to understand that you didn't do it, but you kind of did.
Yeah, yeah, this is what I mean. Like, and it's just about the understanding. It's just about building the empathy as to why things are the way they are. Mm. Why a lot of black people have these perspectives in society and in cultures, and why a lot of us cling to it so much, because so much was lost and taken from us.
So much was lost.
And because, and when something is taken from you,
history
was interrupted. Yeah. And like, but when we look back, and I think it's, I love Jamaica. I love being from there. And then to think back and read books like this and think, well, the only reason I'm in Jamaica is because of X. The Jamaica went through XYZ, like literally great, great, great grandparents probably encountered all of what was happening in this book. And it just kind of makes you really, it kind of does make me sad, because it just makes you think like, well, you know,
where would I be? Hadn't they gone through this pain?
Like, obviously things change and things happen in history and things happen in your personal lives and all this stuff that means that you have to move X, Y, and Z, like, you know, X place or that place, you know, Ellis Island in New York, they had a whole lot of people come through, a lot of immigrants come through to the country. But, and I just want to know what would happen if people were just left alone. Like, do you see what I mean?
And this is it.
Like, we just left alone.
That's the one thing that is so horrific about slavery, is there's always that what if.
Yeah. Because we talk a huge load about the way the human like species is.
Because these white people didn't even know how to bathe. And now they're out here making planes and going out onto the moon.
But it's like,
I'm just angry that our history was so interrupted.
You know, like, because it's like, well, it's like, yeah, like everybody, we love the explorers. We love like explore, do what you have to do. Go and look for things, bring back information.
But when
you start to use that information for your own gain, and that's kind of passed down
at the
detriment of others, and that's passed down through societal culture, do you know what I mean? Like, it just becomes a thing. Like, I was talking to somebody the other day about quote unquote business and stuff, and they were just like, sometimes, like, we're talking about throwing people under the bus when you're like, and I was thinking about like just capitalism in general, and about how some people are always, you think that you have to, like, it has to be, it's a part and parcel of it. You got to throw somebody under the bus to get to where you got to go, or do what you want to do. And I'm just like, while part of that is like human nature, again, is it human nature, or is it,
I don't even think it's human nature.
Or is it just an ingrained thing that we've all had to experience?
Like, you think you have to take someone down? Absolutely not.
You got to take somebody down to get to where you got to be.
Or it's lonely at the top. It doesn't need to be.
This is also what we're taught with regards to colonialism and imperialism and stuff.
You've got to fight your way through.
Columbus went to the West Indies because he's so incompetent he couldn't get to India. So he went to the West Indies, and he took them all down in order to elevate his status. Exactly. And that paved the way for all of this. You see what I mean? And it just becomes like, it just makes you wonder.
It's crazy. I do, one of the things that I always think is that obviously we practice such different cultures and the way, like, for example, technology is set up right now and advancement and invention, I just always think that we lost so much knowledge of our, I want to say mystical arts, but it's just like the fact that we lived very, very differently. And obviously white man saw that as natives and backwards, but we still had societal structures within our villages.
To justify it.
Yeah, we still had...
Justify their actions.
Politics, you know what I mean? We still had rulers. We still had different classes. We still had things that made societies. And had we been able to evolve seamlessly with no meddling from other people and their destructiveness, the what if of what we could have achieved, we just won't know. Because everything, well, not everything, but a lot of it is very influenced. And had we been able to go through, like, when I look at, like, the Americas and Great Britain and how they had different periods of history, whether it's the medieval, whether it's the Renaissance, whether it's the Enlightenment, whether it's Victorian, modernism, all of these different epochs and all of these different windows in society and how it evolved. Can we say we had that? No. We can say we had pre-colonial and post-colonial. And now we're almost trying to find that evolving. We're trying to find that, how do I even say, advancement, but at our own
detriment.
But yeah. And, but it's hard because when you don't have that history, you have to go only up to a certain point. And that is the most saddening thing.
And this is why we're so focused on the future.
Because exactly, yeah.
There's only so much that we can look back on and check, because it's like each generation that we have.
How mad America is. They weren't even made until God knows when. They were you know, so young.
Each black person is like each generation. Well, it's each black person in the West. Each generation has to. It's like each generation is essentially better off than the one before. That makes any sense. Or they're trying to unlearn some things from the one before.
Yeah.
And it's just constantly, it's a constant state of unlearning.
Constantly.
Anyway. So that's the long song, guys.
That mood is that just went deep down. Like, and now I'm like, oh man.
That is the long song, guys. Make sure you pick up the book and have a read, you know, in honor of Andrea Levy.
Yeah, rest in peace. And thank you for
The Small Island is coming to theatres. To the National Theatre.
Is it in May?
Very soon, yeah. So when that comes out, make sure you go and watch it and stuff. We'll definitely be speaking about it. Culture question.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any?
All right, we've got one from Sarah, who said, thank you, Sarah, for, you know, writing in. I've been a fan of your podcast for a while now. Makes my morning commute so much more entertaining. I've recently bought the idea of starting a little book club in my uni, University of Leicester, as part of the East African Society. Yes, Sarah.
I'm saying yes to Leicester.
Yeah. I should have done that. We had one, but it was so tiny. I think it was like 5 people, or maybe 2.
Did I even read in uni? It was basically just textbook.
And what I wanted to do was talk about black books in trying to fit with my goal of reading more black or POC authors. If you have tips, that would be great. I'll definitely be recommending your podcast during my tea and book meets. Or any great books which you think every black woman or man should read. Stay amazing. Kiss. What's your...
Is that any black book?
Yeah.
Depends on what you want to gain from... Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you want to gain from it. So, for example, if you want to talk about the West Indian experience in the UK or in the US...
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say, I would always say The Lonely Londoners.
Yeah.
I would say start with, that's just you know, the Windrush generation.
Yeah.
I think that's a great place to start. It's not too long. It's written beautifully.
Yeah.
Has a great, great story. So that's The Lonely Londoners. I would probably say, I don't even know if I want to mention him anymore, but
Oscar.
I can't.
No, you can't. That book's trash.
It is trash.
It's so trash.
But
Trash man.
But I feel like it's a great perspective on like the Caribbean Latin American experience.
Okay.
What? I think it is though.
Okay, cool. I'm not saying anything.
How to Love a Jamaican by Lexi Arthurs.
Oh, How to Love a Jamaican.
Yeah, How to Love a Jamaican.
I thought you were talking about... anyways.
I was talking about... Yeah. But then this kind of came on. But yeah, but I think like the... also, I would say Aiti by Roxane Gay is...
Did you read it?
Aiti?
Yeah.
I read it a while back. Yeah. That's really good because for me, I'm all about the Caribbean experience in these countries because... I'm very curious as to what it's like in the US as well, because obviously they have that African American, Caribbean, African like divide.
Yeah.
And then you go in with the subsectors of Latin American and et cetera. But yeah, I would say those. And obviously any James Baldwin book that you can get your hands on.
Yeah, that's a good one.
If Beale Street Could Talk, Giovanni's Room. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so I would do, obviously, as you're an East African, all things Wathiongo. So
all things Wathiongo.
Yeah, like Petals of Blood, A Grain of Wheat, or, you know, The Great Wizard of the Crow. Okay. So All Things Wethi Ungol. I would also obviously recommend my favorite black woman book, which is Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. I always talk about how amazing this book is. I talked about it today actually with like someone, and I just got like my stomach just turned and I was tingling all over again as if I had just read it. I absolutely love The Eyes Were Watching God.
I mean, yeah.
It's
all right, I guess.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm not even going to get into that conversation with you. Personally, I just don't care. This book is very personal to me. So if anyone comes for it, I just don't rate.
Yeah.
And I'm very uppity with books. So if you don't like this book, basically you don't have no class and you don't have no taste.
Oh, please.
And that's okay because not everyone can.
It's a good, it's a good book. It's a really good book.
Beautifully written.
Great story.
Poetic. Oh.
Remnant of, it's like post The Long Song, essentially, if you think about it.
It's really, it reminds me of like, it's like anything written in the Enlightenment period. Like, I don't know, like anything Enlightenment, but in a black woman. That's how I feel when I read that book. So yeah, that's what I would recommend. And some Afrofuturism actually, just to kind of get out of the struggle narratives or hardships, read something fantasy. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay.
Do we have another question?
Yeah.
That was from the email.
Make sure you send us an email if you want us to read stuff out.
Yeah, that's, the email address again?
Mostlylit@gmail.com. .co.com. mostlylit@gmail.com. Make sure you email us and just put in the subject, culture question.
Culture question.
So we know.
Yeah, we also have another question from Poppet, who says, listen to your podcast talking about the 1% and Harry Potter, which is the episode that we did last week. Ooh. Do you think J.K. Rowling could go back and rewrite the series as more deliberately diverse? Hopefully doing proper research and ensuring accuracy as well. Oh.
So, can you imagine?
Or maybe just...
a black wizarding ACS.
It would bang. What do you mean?
That we're out here doing...
Maybe you need to write that.
Oh, man.
The black wizarding ACS.
My fan fiction days are over.
Yo, you need to write that.
I might return.
He says as he puts his hoodie on. That would be dope. I personally don't think that she needs to do this.
No.
I think maybe
she wrote her reality, even though it was fiction.
She's done what she needs to do. I do think that she needs to maybe mentor and provide a platform for somebody else who can do this narrative justice, i.e. a black person writing fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to write from a learned experience. It's better to write from a lived experience, in my eyes. It's okay to learn, but there is always going to be a limit.
Mm-hmm.
And so for her to be completely immersed, one, she needed to have lived in a place where the culture around her is very diverse, and I'm not sure if she has. I don't really know how her life has been. For her to have like a modicum of insight into diverse lives. What I say. I say she needs to not do that, but allow other people, mentor, probably support other fantasy writers to do so.
Do you know what? Like at the end of the day, because like I think that if it was to become a TV series, for example.
Mm.
Then that would be the opportunity to. Yeah, it would be dope. Imagine season one is Philosopher's Stone. Season two, oh my god, that's a whole seven seasons of just
eight
pure
even.
Greatness. No, it wouldn't be eight. There's seven books.
Yeah, but do you know how long some of them are?
Yeah, but then that could be the season. It'd be a season then.
Really?
Yeah, because I think that even like, if season one is what 10 episodes,
yeah,
and they're at an hour each,
really meticulous.
And each chapter, yeah, you know what I mean. They can probably put two chapters in one episode. That could be sick. That could work.
Yeah, but I guess.
But as I say, if they were to reimagine it as a series, for example, that would be the opportunity in which you could probably be more diverse.
Yeah,
because then, when they did the play and there was this palaver around
Hermione,
around the black Hermione, I forgot what her name was. You know what I mean, but like it would be, that would be the time to do it.
Yeah,
So, and I think that's the way it would work.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So, I like that.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, as we said last week with her picking two, her name was Duma, Noma Dumezweni. Dumezweni, yeah. I'm probably saying it, pronouncing it very wrong.
Just butchering her name.
I'm so sorry. But yeah, it was that whole, there's a whole like chain of things that were going on in there. But you know, we'll see. Yeah. She can't really, you can't go in and change the names.
No.
Of like Cho Chang and stuff.
Because she needs to give them depth and character. She can't just be like, and here is an Asia person. Yeah. Another Padma.
Exactly.
Padma part two.
But she can say, this is Lavender Brown, and Lavender Brown's a mixed race girl.
Mm.
Or this is...
that's a really mixed you know, girl's name.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Lavender Brown.
Or you know what I'm saying? Or, I don't know, Helen Bones. Or what, Susan Bones or whatever. I don't know. It could be that could literally be a Chinese person. It doesn't have to be. It didn't mean anyway. Yeah. I'm just saying. But yeah, I mean that's the only way it could work. That's the only way it could work. I don't think that she could rewrite them.
So those are the culture questions that we got this week, guys. Make sure you send us your questions, whether it's on the different mediums, Mostly Lit on Twitter, Mostly Lit Pod on Instagram. Email us at mostlylit@gmail.com.
Mostly Flicks this week. What are we watching? What are you watching?
Umbrella Academy. Literally binged right through it.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Okay.
Vanya is an op.
She's not an op, man.
Vanya is an op.
Okay, so basically Umbrella Academy is about 7 children who were adopted by this billionaire.
They were like born under miraculous situations.
They're born under miraculous situations and... I think that's pretty much the only way you can explain it without spoiling stuff.
Yeah, and they have powers.
Well, they have powers and abilities and stuff.
And they go around saving the world.
Yeah, saving the world. But yeah, so you think that Vanya's an op?
So basically one of them out of these 7 is actually ordinary and doesn't have powers, apparently. But obviously, not to spoil it, she's an op. I knew from the moment that she stepped in and she's come to do... Oh, I'm ordinary. Oh, so I'm so different. So
Ellen Page
had so much daddy issues.
Ellen Page plays Vanya, and
she's number 7.
She's number 7, and I think I feel like it's really well written, and I think it's really well shot.
Yeah,
I love Robert Sheehan's character.
The one that can speak to dead people.
Yeah,
yeah.
Klaus, and I just think I think it was really good. You know, I think with Netflix pulling a lot of these comic book films and shows, obviously, because whatever's happening with Disney creating their own platform and stuff, I think that looking at this and the adaptations of the comic book genre and the graphic novel genre, putting it into TV series, it makes the imagery that much greater because obviously because it's primarily images that they're using, and it just makes it's pretty much a storyboard already given to them that they have to
just
use
adapt,
and they just adapt to it.
It's a really great show, guys. I would recommend it.
It's funny.
It like you know tells it really brings to thought like to the light certain moral topics. One of them has the power to kind of tell you to do and think whatever it is that they want you to, and I remember the first time. When I first watched it, I was talking to you. I was like, why don't she just tell them to just do this? And it's like, actually, there's a lot that happens there. Like, she's kind of like going through some shit.
Number three. Yeah.
And she has the power to like, basically power of persuasion to just persuade somebody to do and feel and do anything.
Yeah.
And the repercussions that come from that are immense. So she actually doesn't do it as much. And so I was like, what, bitch? Just tell him to, you know, like, just, you can do this.
Yeah.
But actually, no, you can't. So yeah, there are loads of different types of moralistic, ethical issues that prop up. It's also funny. Mm-hmm. Klaus is hilarious.
But Robert Sheehan does play characters really well.
Yeah. And...
cool.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm watching This Is Us. I caught back up.
Yeah, I'm week. Still behind.
I caught up this week and I just have to say...
Were you crying?
Like on the last episode, I was a bit like I had a bit of a tear that just rolled up in the corner of my left eye, like a little bit.
Oh, really? You had a get out tear, the one that just streams down.
No, is it because it didn't get out of my eye? Oh. So it stopped in the
it
corner.
It was just dangling.
It stopped right there.
It was just it was at like, the edge of the
like,
cliff.
Like, oh. But Felicia Rashad was in this episode as Beth's mother. Beth goes back.
I love Beth.
And it's about kind of like thinking, this episode was really, the latest episode was really, well, I don't know if it's the latest one, but I'm just catching up. The episode that I'm watching, watched, was really about your dreams when you're younger and how much, you know, people like take up the space from you, take the air out of you. Like, you know, a lot of kids, like myself in particular, were very creative growing up. And then this whole kind of, oh, you need to find your path. You need to get onto something that is a bit more secure. You need to sit on, you know, you need to get a good job. You need to do all this stuff. And because it gets drained out of you, a lot of people don't necessarily revisit that kind
their
of
dreams.
Their dream or that life that they used to have. And it just, and it was very, very, it was a very, very powerful episode because it just, it made me think about all the stuff that I want to do next and the kind of things that I want to continue doing and the things I want to revisit and re-invite into myself.
Oh, that's amazing.
And
I
was like,
wow.
But the thing is, and it was really powerful because it was just like, like when we, when you find out a bit more about the backstory of Beth, who's Randall Pearson's wife, in the show, it just kind of like everything kind of just then makes
sense.
She's
an amazing character.
Amazing character.
I literally was like, if I'm going to be a wife, that is the type of wife that I would want to be.
I was watching, like, when I watched the way that every all the characters have developed and just the way that they all kind of stand out in their own particular way and the flashbacks to the past and all that stuff. It's just amazing. It's an amazing series. I would say to anybody going to watch it.
The dream thing is hilarious because I recently bought a picturing book. A colouring book.
A colouring book.
Because I remember the joy in which I used to feel colouring in.
Yeah.
I was literally like meticulous. I had different types of gel pens. Yeah. I had different types of colouring pens and I used to love it so much. And then I just stopped. I don't even know what happened, but I just lost it.
You just lost
it. And I was like,
lost your way.
Gonna buy it. So yeah, I really want to get back into colouring in. And I know it sounds really lame, but I'm so excited to. So yeah, like revisiting dreams is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting my keyboard back, so I'm getting back into piano. And then I'm speaking more languages again. I just, like, it's just about trying to revisit and find this, find those things that really kind of like helped you.
Ignite like, your, you know.
Your soul.
Your soul.
And help you grow into the person that you were when you were younger. Obviously with a bit more of a clearer head than when you were just living
and a bit of money.
And a bit of money. But yeah, that's what we're watching.
Fabulous.
All right. So thanks, guys, for following us this episode, following us through. Make sure that you subscribe, rate, review on all the things, all the places.
Everywhere.
Everywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, etc., SoundCloud. Find us on Mostly Lit. Twitter, Mostly Lit Pod, on Instagram.
Email us
mostlylit@gmail.com. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere, literally.
We're everywhere.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Tell your friends, to your grandparents.
As I said, tell everybody that's living, who has ears, if you need to.
The toxic ones and the non-toxic ones.
And if there's any topics that you want us to cover or you want us to talk about, make sure you message us and say, hey guys, have you thought about doing X, Y, and Z? Because we're always like happy to hear what you guys think and what you guys want us to talk about. But yeah, is there anything you want to add, Ray?
Nah. I'm so like nice and relaxed and chill. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you know, anything you want to add?
I'm good. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.